Köln 75 im Verleih von Alamod Film.
Ich will ein Konzert organisieren für Keith Jarrett.
Jazz ist Museumsmusik, Jazz ist tot.
Regisseur Ido Fluck erzählt die faszinierende Geschichte des legendären Köln-Konzerts von Keith Jarrett.
Das können Sie nicht machen.
Ich habe keine Wahl.
Mit einem großen Star-Ensemble um Mala Emde und John McGarrow. Köln 75, ab 13. März im Kino.
Erstklassisch mit Mischke, der musikalische Podcast des Hamburger Abendblatts.
Schönen guten Tag zu einer neuen Folge. Meine Begrüßung heute könnte ich zweisprachig machen. Ich könnte es mir aussuchen, entweder Bonjour oder Buongiorno. Mein Gast ist in Paris geboren. Das erste Mal live gesehen habe ich sie 2019 in der Elbphilharmonie mit Händel, Scherza in Fieder und dann 2020 in der Cousie in den Salzburger Festspielen. Ich habe sie gesehen, sie hat mich nicht gesehen. Das Ganze wurde damals von Joanna Malwitz dirigiert, diese sensationelle Aufführung während der Corona-Zeit. Und sie ist keine Balletttänzerin, obwohl auch das hätte passieren können. Warum, werden wir gleich besprechen. Demnächst ist sie in der Elbphilharmonie mit einem Liederabend und jetzt ist sie erstmal hier, was sehr schön ist. Und wir sprechen gleich auf Englisch, weil ich nie Französisch gelernt habe. Ich habe also eine großartige Entschuldigung. Also bonjour oder buongiorno. Léa Desandré, that's right, isn't it?
Desandré, yes, that's right. Wonderful. Well done.
Okay, thank you for having me and nice to speak.
Thank you for having me.
Und übrigens, falls Sie jetzt schon neugierig geworden sind, wer in diesem Podcast schon zu Gast war und andere interessante Dinge womöglich von sich gegeben hat, Sie finden Erstklassisch mit Mischke auf abendblatt.de und auf allen anderen Podcast-Plattformen. Und so ab 5 Sternen aufwärts, die Bewertung freut uns und hilft uns und dann machen wir auch gerne weiter. Aber jetzt komme ich zu meinem Gast. So, when I read about you, one of the first things I saw that you just became a singer because you didn't become a ballet dancer. Sort of.
Kind of. It's kind not exactly of. That. I wanted to be a ballet dancer and then I discovered opera and I decided to choose to try to be an opera singer more than a dancer. Also because I've seen a video of Nathalie Dessay and she was singing while dancing and I thought, well, it's kind of, you can do both if you sing. So that's cool.
Did it work out already? And did you actually sing and dance on the stage?
I have to say, very often now, because now stage directors know that I'm a trained dancer for 12 years. So lately, for example, I was with Robert Carson in Paris, mm-hmm. and I had to dance. And the production before of Medea in Garnier, I also had to dance. So that's very, very fun, and it helps me to sing better. I think. I don't know if I sing better, but I feel better in my singing if I just danced before, because it helps me to connect with my body and to feel more free in the instrument. And so it's nicer to sing better than.
But isn't it totally complicated? I mean, professional dancers who are just dancers have all their hands full and all their brain at work just to dance and not make mistakes. Singers just as well. And you do both things at
no,
the same time.
No, I'm not a professional dancer. I've been trained in ballet. So I know how to move my body, but I'm not able at all to do what my colleague dancers are doing during productions. It's just sometimes directors ask me to do, for example, in Les Fêtes d'Hébé with Robert Carson, I had a tiny solo dance of maybe 1 minute. So it's very short and it's while I'm not singing. So, and it's done with lots of love and passion, but I don't have the pretension to say that I dance as well as a professional dancer.
Okay. But what I wanted to know first was how hard was it to make this decision and to say, okay, I'm going to sing professionally after training for so many years.
What?
After so training. Many years. Yeah, after so many. Yeah, because you've trained, you've worked for this. You thought, maybe one day I'm going to be a dancer. And then you just kissed this idea goodbye in a way.
Yeah, but it was not a difficult decision because I discovered... I was too tall to enter the school in Paris until I was 12 years old, because they have they had, at least at the time, special rules. And I could just do the audition, the exam, when I was 12, because I was finally the good size. And at that time also, I started to dance, and both disciplines were fascinating for me. And it's my ballet teacher one day, she told me, well, if you want to prepare well for the exam of the school of the Petit Rat de l'Opéra in Paris, you have the time you're giving for the singing, you have to give it for the dance. And very naturally, I said, well, I have to experience more with the singing, so I don't want to quit. So if it's not my time with the dancing, it's fine. I just follow what the universe has for me. And it became very natural. I stopped dancing when I was maybe 19 years old, because I moved to Venice and I had no dance school there. I don't feel that I had to sacrifice anything. I just followed my heart, and my heart was with the opera. So in a way, what I learned also with the dance lessons, I still use nowadays for the quality of the work that we do when we dance. We learn to be very rigorous and patient and disciplined. So this things I still use today. And then when I'm on stage, to move my body, to be flexible, to know how to understand the distance with my colleagues on stage, all that comes from the dancing. So it's just life made it as good as it could be.
Mm-hmm. Since you already mentioned this scene of seeing Nathalie Dessay in TV and singing and dancing, was there an actual moment when you discovered, I'm not just singing okay, there might actually be a singer inside of me? Some point in your training when you actually noticed, I might have to think about getting this as a career?
Again, it came very naturally. So I started singing in the choir of my school, because I loved my music teacher. And I've been like that also before. When I was younger at school, I had an amazing sport teacher, and I became passionate by sports, all sorts of sports like basketball, tennis, handball. So thanks to the teacher, I was very curious to get to know the discipline better. So with the wonderful music teacher, I entered the choir of the class and of the school. And we had to sing one by one. So one day she said, oh, you have a nice voice. If you like singing, you should try to enter the choir of the kids of the Paris Opera house, because it was very close to my house also. So I thought, okay, why not? Let's try. That's cool. So I tried the audition and I entered. And then we had to do, I sang in Werther while Jonas Kaufmann and Sophie Koch were singing. So it was very inspiring. I thought, oh, that's nice. And I enjoyed very much being on this huge stage with my friends, having lots of fun. So I just continued, and my parents offered me singing lessons just to improve and to feel better with the choir discipline. And like that, it continued. And I never thought I wanted this to be my work. I just thought I cannot do anything else than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would probably hopefully earn money thanks to that, and will not have to do anything else, because there is no option in the future other than spending my time singing and being on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was I wanted something, so I went for it, and I gave, I, yeah.
Did you ever have the chance of telling Jonas Kaufmann that you were one of the girls back on the stage when he sang in Paris Werther one time? And
Never, because we've never done anything together, so I never met him.
Okay, that's a big task.
And sometimes it's not maybe a good thing to say, because then when I say that to some French colleagues with whom I was on stage, they just answer me, "Oh, I feel very old now that you say that." So.
And when you mentioned that there was no plan B for you, never, you right from the start, you thought, I have to sing, I have to be on the stage, there's nothing else for me. I mean, not every parent is really excited and jubilees when the kid tells them, I want to be an artist. Did you hear anything from your parents when you told them that, I want to be a singer, I don't want to study medicine, I don't want to become a teacher, I don't want to become a physicist, I don't want to study law? I don't know whether any ideas were in your house, but what was it like when you told them, by the way, I'm going to be an artist?
So again, I've never said I want to be an artist. Uh-huh. It was natural in just seeing probably for them how happy and full of life I was when I was coming back from my singing lessons or the opera productions. And I have, this is probably the biggest chance I have in my life, is that I have parents that they just want me to be happy. And they've done everything they could for me to have access to what I needed and just to help me to reach my dreams. So they come from a family of artists also, so maybe it helps, because my parents, they work in the movie industry. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather, one of them was also in the movie industry. The other one was the man presenting at the circus all the shows. So he was living in a roulotte, you know, in a van and following the circus. And my other grandma was an opera singer also. So it was very spontaneous. And I've never had any problem on that side. And I remember some friends in the choir having difficulties with their parents saying, well, you have to study law before to have a real job, and then you can have fun. But this is not a life work. So I'm very lucky.
So if you had told them, if you would have told them, I want to become a lawyer or a doctor, then you would be the black sheep of the family, because everybody else is working in the arts more or less, or has
maybe no, because I also have other people in the family being having more serious jobs. I don't know how to say. I have a little sister, and for both of us, they just want us to have access to what we love every day and to wake up and to go to work with pleasure, which is great luxury. So, I think it was not a surprise anyway. Mm-hmm. Actually, we never, you know, when you are at school and you finish the main school and you have to decide the studies you want to do, all my friends, they were applying on a website to say, okay, my first wish is to go there, my second is this school, and my third is this school. And at the end of the year, the school sent a message to the family saying, well, it's very weird, we've not received any wish from Leah's side. And then we were having dinner with my parents and we just realized, oh. And my parents were like, so you don't want to go to school, don't you? I was like, no.
Something completely different in a way. You're singing mezzo-soprano, so you're not absolutely working at the highest level of notes possible for a woman to sing. Is this because I was never good at singing, but and even more so, I'm not a woman, but is it sort of comfortable singing mezzo-soprano, or did you ever have ambitions to, if I try real hard, I'm going to be a real soprano. I'm going to sing Queen of the Night. I'm going to sing all this crazy stuff. Or was it just like natural as well? Like, you're a mezzo. That's it. You don't have to work hard to get real high. You don't have to get low to become an alto. So mezzo soprano is the ideal middle way in a way for you, or
no? It's not. The voice is first of all, it's the physique that the physical side of the body that is your instrument. So if you have longer vocal cords or smaller vocal cords, it defines the tessitura that you have. You have natural abilities. Some people are. It's easy for them to go very fast with agilities and coloratura. For others, it's easier to sing very long notes with lots of legato. And the tessitura is basically what the nature is giving you. So, for example, my teacher in Venice, Sara Mingardo, she has a pure contralto voice, which is the lowest female voice. She has a very, even when she speaks, a very low range. And it's not that she doesn't try, she doesn't study enough to be able to sing the Queen of the Night. It's just that physique is not made for her to sing that. And it's the same for me. I don't like to say that I'm a mezzo-soprano, soprano, or whatever. I'm a human being, that's sure. Well, I think. And at the time when composers were writing music for operas, they were writing for people. So they were writing, for example, they would write for you, depending on your vocal abilities. And the most interesting thing is to follow the career of a singer. At that time, to understand which roles the singer used to sing, because you have hundreds of sopranos, thousands of sopranos, but each one of them is different. So I have the notes to sing the Queen of the Night. I do it at home to have fun, but it's not the part of my voice. If you look at the whole role, the Königin der Nacht, I don't know how to say, sorry for my German. I cannot sing this role. It's not comfortable for me. And someone who will be able to sing this role will not be comfortable singing Cherubino, for example, a role in which I'm comfortable. So you just have to understand your own instrument, to understand what are your qualities. If it's too, I love to go high, but I have to come back in the medium range. Everyone is different, and it takes a long time to understand the instrument. Also, the instrument is changing through the years. So you just have to listen to the body.
Mm. Since everything came so natural for you, how important is quietness or rest? If everything came so natural and you felt from the beginning that you have to be on the stage, is there a certain point of time after, I don't know, 3 days that you get nervous and itchy and you think, I have to get back on the stage? Or is this just as necessary for your job to be off stage than to be on stage?
Yes, it is as necessary. it's very important, actually. And when you have shows, you have days off in between. I used to do many things between these days, just thinking, okay, I'm in town, so I'm going to see my friends, going to go to the museum, going to do this interview and to meet this person. Also, now I'm singing bigger roles, so they are more involving in a physical way. But now I just keep my days off. And okay, if I want to go to the museum, I go alone. I read my book. I study with calm. The best way to also regenerate the voice is to keep silence. So my favorite company is the nature or the sound of the city. I need also to hear the sound of my voice in my head, to hear my thoughts. And also when I'm home in my family, we love to have music at home or to have, I don't know, a podcast or a TV. Or when I'm alone, sometimes I choose my moment. I will listen to a specific music I want to listen to because I want to listen to it, and I just do that. But otherwise, if I'm doing other things and if I'm resting, I love silence. Or I have another passion, which is kind of weird, but I have this audios of songs of birds or songs of sound of the nature, like the wind in the trees, in the leaves, and little birds singing and the sound of the river. And this is so comforting for me. And that's what I listen to.
Okay, I won't tell anybody. You might be singing better in a way than someone like Taylor Swift, yet, but you might not get as famous and not as rich as she has become. Is that any problem for you?
Oh, no, not at all. My dad, who worked in the cinema industry and used to go on tour with Brad Pitt and George Clooney and all these famous stars from Hollywood, he always told me, vivons heureux, vivons cachés. To live happy, let's live hiding. I don't know how to translate it. Let's hide. Hidden. Don't show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what's the equivalent in English. And so my work makes that I have to have a part of me that is public. But I'm so happy to have the liberty to walk in any street and just to enjoy my confidentiality, mm-hmm. To be no one. And I'm very happy not to be Taylor Swift. Or I think we don't realize how heavy this kind of career is. Mm-hmm. Mine is beautiful. I have access to the most beautiful opera houses, to lots of beauty. But when I come back home, I'm no one. I'm just Leah, and that's great.
So what was it like when someone asked you for an autograph? I guess that happened already.
Yeah, this is part of the job. We do it. If it makes the audience happy, that's the most important. We do photos also. And sometimes in the streets in Paris, I have people stopping me and saying, oh, I've listened to your CD and I love it. And just to see the smile of the person makes me very happy. But I don't need that to be happy in my life. But I prefer that than being on stage and people boo, saying boo. It's better this way. And my work is to offer myself incredible physical sensations through the music, and to get to know myself better through the characters also, and to connect with wonderful and inspiring human beings. But the biggest part is to offer emotions to the audience. So if it offers them emotions to have an autograph, then let's do it.
Did you ask someone else for an autograph already? Like maybe,
yeah, I have, like, Nathalie Doucet, of course.
Okay.
Many of them. Not anymore. When I was a student, I used to ask some singers that inspires me to do an autograph on my scores. For example, for Il Barbiere di Siviglia, I have Joyce Di Donato, who's a wonderful opera singer, and she signed it because she was, for me, one of the best singer of the role I was dreaming to sing in this opera. So I thought, let's put some magic in my score. Maybe it makes it, then it happens, then I sing Rosina, you know? I really believe in science and in trusting the universe and what life has for me, and to see signs everywhere and to really believe in my dreams, to create them in my mind so that I can create them in my life.
Did you tell Joyce Di Donato that if she puts a note in your score, then one day you're going to sing as good as she does?
No, never. But I've told her that she made an autograph on my score, yeah. But again, it's also a part of my life that I, well, I'm happy to when I meet the artists I used to listen to a lot when I was a teenager. I'm happy to come as a colleague and not as a fan. You know, it's different position and it offers a better communication also.
Mm-hmm. I have a small collection of questions that are more personal. So what was the first or the biggest defeat you experienced in your career? Some dream that absolutely did not come true, something that you really wished for and it just made poof and it went away?
I had a Mélisande planned in the theater where they used to, where they created it.
Mm.
And it get canceled 2 times.
Oh.
So that was the biggest disappointment. Otherwise, I've been lucky until now. Yeah.
Do you think that this might come up a third time and then finally you're going to get your part in this opera?
I'm going to sing this role next season and I have another one coming. So, but it's just to sing it in the place where it was created. Being on the same stage is kind of a magical thing also because it's my favorite opera.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in French we say, never two without three. So it means if they offer me a third time, it might be canceled again. So we don't know. We'll see.
Okay, we'll see. Is there anything that you really don't give a whatever about in your career? Is there something that you really don't care about, whether it happens or not, something that's completely uninteresting for you or in other parts of your life, something that just doesn't matter to you anyhow? Like, I don't care how much money I'm going to earn. I don't care how I'm going to look on stage. I don't care whether I have to work on Saturdays, whatever.
Oh, I don't care that I have to work on Saturdays and on holidays. And I've been not caring for years, not having holidays at all, actually, or days off. That's it. I do care if I don't eat. I need to eat to be in good mood.
Mm-hmm.
But not to have days off is okay.
Does that mean you need to cook as well for yourself? I mean, like being in the kitchen, doing things, or are you just as lousy as I am in the kitchen?
I do both. When I'm traveling, for example, when it's a tour, I love to go to the restaurant or just fast eating around just to try the specialties of the place. But when I'm in an opera production, like for now, I'm in Zurich rehearsing for 6 weeks. I come with my personal knife and my personal objects for the kitchen, because when you arrive in an apartment you're renting, very often it's not well, the material you find is not well. So mm-hmm. In this moment, I love to cook also because it's a very meditative, silent moment. And you take care of yourself and you can think about other things. And it's a mix. Very long answer. Sorry.
No problem. Since you're from Paris, the next question might answer itself, but what's something that you spend an enormous and completely unreasonable amount of money for?
In Paris?
Yeah, what I mean, in Paris, the idea or the answer might be quite easy because of fashion, but is there anything you spend money, lots of money for, and afterwards you always think, oh no, I shouldn't have done that?
I don't buy myself lots of things, but when I buy something, I can spend a lot of money if what I want is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like to, when I buy something, to keep it in my mind, it's for my whole life, you know. So, yeah, it's fashion. It's for this fabulous knife I bought in Japan. It was extremely expensive. But they say if you take good care of it, you can keep it your whole life. And it's the best knife ever. So... And I love to spend money at the restaurant to celebrate with my families and friends for a special event also. In Paris, we have incredible restaurants, all kinds. And recently, for example, I went to a Japanese sushi master.
With your knife and, or without?
No, he had the biggest knife than me. voilà.
Okay. Since you mentioned your family, I wondered whether you had your first performance at Salzburg Festival when you were 21, if I'm right. Did all your family come there as well to see Lea performing at such a famous production and at such a famous venue, or is that sort of normal for your family? Okay, she's singing there, whatever. It's Wednesday, we can't come.
No, my family's always trying. My parents always trying to come if they can come. My mom, very often, if it's an important show for me, she comes.
Fünf Fragen,
many
fünf
times.
Antworten.
Very often, she could be the cover of my cover because she knows the role by memory at the end, just coming to every shows. But in Salzburg, we had a beautiful time. They came for my first time, but they came, I think, every year. And they came for the show, and then we enjoyed the countryside. And it's such a beautiful place also to spend time, quality time. So, good match.
Mm. What's worse for you, getting on the stage or getting off the stage?
What's worse?
Worse. What's worse than other things? Is it worse for you to get on a stage, or is it not as nice to get off a stage?
Well, it's 50-50. Mm-hmm. Because when I have to go on stage, I don't want to go on stage. But once I'm on stage, I don't want to go off stage. So you see, I have big problems, you know. It's not natural to go on stage just to put yourself in front of so many people and in a way to put yourself in danger, because you never know how the body will react. So, but then once you're there, it's so good, you don't want to leave. That's my answer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, five short questions. You can just say yes or no, or the one thing or the other thing.
Okay.
What do you prefer, piano or forte?
Piano or?
Forte.
Piano.
Your favorite instrument and your own, the voice doesn't count.
Cello.
I would have thought lute.
Cello.
Okay.
I've always wanted to play the cello or the piano.
Did you ever try it, actually?
The cello once. It was very fun. The piano... very often. I have to play the piano right after we speak. So,
what did you do with the first professional money you earned?
I think I bought myself a pyjama. and I still have this pyjama in my parents' house. Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay.
You were not expecting that, huh?
No, I mean, I had so many nice answers, but this one is a new one. I like people buying dinner for their family or buying something to put the money in they just earned, or shoes or whatever. But buying a pyjama is new. Buying a bike. Somebody told me he had bought a bike. But pyjama is nice.
But it's not when I had my first fee as an opera singer. It was my first job as a teenager. Yeah.
Okay. But the first money as a singer?
As a singer, it was probably dinner with my family. Yeah.
Okay.
I've always wanted to make myself gifts after important moments, but I've never done that. I should start.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's something that I've heard before, that people tell me that whenever something went really nice and well and was a success, then they just get something for themselves and make a present to themselves. So maybe a second knife.
Could be a smaller one. Yeah, I need one.
Beer or champagne?
Sorry?
Beer or champagne?
I don't like bubbles. That's my answer.
Okay. What kind of superpower would you like to have?
I'd love to fly. Or to be able to be at this at two different places at the same time.
Okay.
Ubiquité, we say in French.
And
I have a better one.
Okay.
To heal people. Like I touch you, if you're sick, you're not sick anymore.
Okay. If I've just cut off my arm, you put a hand on,
exactly,
on what's left of it, and then whoop.
Yes.
The arm's back on.
Yeah, that's the coolest superpower.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I found a few quotes from you, and one of the quotes was, "On stage, you feel like an animal." I thought that's interesting. What's it like feeling like an animal on stage?
It's when your brain stops. When I mean my brain is just questions. You know, an animal will do things by instinct. And we ask ourselves so many things before doing it. And when I'm on stage, I just follow the energies on stage and my instinct, because I'm supposed to have rehearsed enough so that my brain is not of any kind of use anymore.
You still have to work with what's going on around you. You just can't.
Yep. But it's more like it becomes instinctive, mm-hmm, because you've worked on it so much that it's like when you're biking, you don't think anymore about moving your legs. You do it because it's printed in you. And if you rehearse enough, and if you know your role well enough, and if you've been able to clean the technical difficulties, once you're on stage, you feel like an animal because you just follow what's printed inside of you, and you listen to the music and you answer to the music, but you have to lose control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think animals, they don't control themselves. If they are hungry, they will kill. That's not a good answer. you know what I mean? They go with, mm-hmm, the instinct. That's what I'm looking for on stage.
Okay, so ideal is going to be when, or is it still Léa Desandré singing all the time on a stage, or is it Mozart singing out of you and there's something else going on with you and you're not yourself anymore?
It's more like there is the score and there is the audience, and I'm the bridge in between. So if I'm doing singing a character, for example, now Poppea in Agrippina, it's not interesting to see Léa. So we'll work on the character. I will still be me, but me is not interesting. What's interesting is to give life to what was created and to offer it.
That's really modest. I mean, saying I'm not interesting.
No, that's really what I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the final question would be, if you would be able to meet the 20-year-old Léa Desandré, what would be your most important advice for yourself being 20?
Keep trusting your heart, trusting yourself, and follow your heart, not the others' advices. Trust yourself. Follow this instinct. And don't think about what the other people will say. Because to be happy, you have to be truly yourself, not what the others want to make of you. And then being happy, you can give happiness and joy and love to the others.
The interesting part of your answer is that it seems as if this might have been a problem when you had been 20 and you've learned.
No, actually, when I was 20, my whole life, things I've done following this instinct and this passion I've had inside, not doing what was supposed to be done. I've not been to the school, the conservatory. I've not done what is usually done in a percorso, in a study time, and even in my life. Usually, again, you sing what's written for the repertoire. And my voice being also in between different repertoires, I had to understand my voice. So I've always trusted my guts and my instinct. So it would just be my advice, because I'm very proud of that, that I've made decisions because I was trusting them in deeply inside of me and not because it was what was supposed to be done.
Okay, and see where it brought you. I mean, now you're in Zurich rehearsing and your career seemed to work out quite okay.
I'm happy. I'm very lucky, yeah.
Okay, so thanks very much. I've learned a lot, and maybe I'll get a Japanese knife myself.
Yes, please. What's usually about? It changes your life, definitely.
Changes my life, okay.
No, because then cutting elements becomes a real pleasure. And we should just, all the little things we do in life, they should all be done with pleasure.
Okay, that's a perfect ending. Thank you very much. I hope to see you on stage here in Hamburg, and I just wrap
yes,
up.
Yes, please.
So, wir haben viel gelernt.
I hope you come to the concert.
I will. Wir haben viel gelernt von Léa Desandré, also inzwischen jetzt auch vor allem, dass man unbedingt ein japanisches Messer braucht, um Spaß im Leben zu haben. Um nochmal darauf hinzuweisen, das Konzert von ihr ist Anfang März in der Elbphilharmonie mit Thomas Dumford. Es gibt Lieder und Chansons von Charpentier bis, ich glaube, bis Barbara. Und es gibt eine CD, die heißt Idylle, die ist vor kurzem erschienen. Also auf jeden Fall gibt es einiges von ihr zu hören. Und alle anderen Folgen hören Sie auf abendblatt.de. Und ich freue mich jetzt auf das Konzert im März und werde jetzt mal schauen, wo ich so ein Messer finde. Vielen Dank.
Ein Podcast von Funke.
Weitere Podcasts vom Hamburger Abendblatt finden Sie in unserer Abendblatt-Podcast-App und auf abendblatt.de/podcast.